unfortunately, very often it's not possible force the husband to give a get, and that's why we have a problem of akunot, and women who can't extricate themselves from that situation. You've seen, it's based on the psakim of Rav Eliashiv. Rav Eliashiv was one of the great dayanim in Israel. He was Gdolador, one of the Gdolim, but he died at the age of 102, so he has been around for a very long time. And he represented the Haredi community that has the power of the Batei Dinim in the land. So this is the history of Rav Eliashiv. And this was written by a judge. This is written by a judge, and it's a review. It's a review of the decisions made. It's a review, I'll repeat this for... It's a review of the decisions that he made, Rav Eliashiv, in various cases that came before him in relation to the get. Oh, it's a very big subject.
This is coming to the Beth Din or to the Israeli courts?
No, the Beth Batei Dinim, but it's the law of the country. The law of the get is the law of the country. There's no other laws.
So there's no civil divorce in Israel?
No, in Israel, this is a civil divorce.
This is, yeah.
You cannot get divorced.
No, you're
Jewish.
No,
it's a judge who has written this essay.
Okay.
That's an account of some of the decisions that Rav Eliashiv made over many years that he presided over the Beit Din. It'll tell you, it's an interesting story about interesting cases too. The origin of the get is, of course, a verse in the book of Deuteronomy, which we read only a number of weeks ago before Rosh Hashanah, the Siddur of Ki Tetzeh.
Ruth.
I see. Oh, we didn't know you were back.
I thought you were still in Israel.
We really didn't know that you. We've just started. Oh, nice to see you. Anyway, we weren't sure. We started only a minute ago, and we decided to do a new question about the get.
Miss whatever you were doing in the middle, wouldn't I?
So
we're getting along. Sorry.
Thought it couldn't get any worse.
So I said just before you came, Ruth, that I wanted to explain maybe the well-known problem of aguna, why we have agunot today, women who can't get a get. What is the halachic basis for this matter that is presenting us with so much difficulty today? The origin of the question is, of course, the verse in the Torah, which we read only a few weeks ago, Ki Tetzeh. It says that if you marry someone and then you don't like her, then the Torah says, and you've got it as the title, Mechatav leSefer Kedut veNatan biYada, and he should write to her a letter of kedut. Karat means to cut, so it's a letter that says that she's cut off, that he's severing her, his connections with her, links with her. Venatan biyadan, he's got to give it to her. He's got to give it into her hand. This is the law as the Torah states. So the Torah seems to give all the rights to the man and none to the woman. Namely, the woman has to accept it when the husband decides to give it.
She
couldn't in ancient times refuse. She couldn't refuse. This was a later enactment that a woman had to consent. But this is not in the Torah. This is a later law. But in the Torah, it says simply that it's the husband who writes, and the husband who gives, and the woman who has to accept, and there's nobody else involved. The Beit Din is only a supervisor. The Beit Din has no powers except to supervise and decide if the get is kosher. That's the problem. It's like a wedding. At the wedding, the rabbi also doesn't do anything except supervise. The rabbi's job is like a rabbi has to, or a mashgiach has to check kashrut when there's a function. So you have a Mashgiach. What does the Mashgiach do? He checks that everything is okay. So that's exactly what a rabbi is to do at the wedding.
And the same as again.
And he has to be a witness, the rabbi. Usually he is the witness. He doesn't need to be the witness. You can appoint other people who are witnesses, provided they're religious. But the rabbi's job is to supervise, and the same applies with the get. Our supervision is important. Mm. Things have to be done properly. The get is to be written according to the rules. And if the get is not written according to the rules, it's not kosher. It's exactly like other things in Judaism. Mm. Things have to be kosher. And if they're not, appropriate, and they cannot do the job. And these are the rulings with regard. So since it's the husband's choice to give a get, therefore, what can a Beit Din compel a husband? That's the question. That's a question that has arisen in Jewish law, and it's not a modern question. It goes back to the Talmud. The problem is that today we've got different circumstances, different situations where we get into difficulties, and you'll see this will give you a very good idea of what the problem is.
So, but in ancient times, right, we could have more than one wife.
Yeah.
So you could remarry and not let your wife, your first wife.
You could remarry and have two wives.
You could, and not give her a get.
Yeah, you could. You didn't have to give a get. But maybe the wife didn't like it. If the wife wouldn't like it, would you compel the husband to give a get? And that one of the cases, this is one of the cases that came before Rav Eliashiv. Mm. You'll see, that's one of the cases we're going to study.
Okay.
So anyway...
Sorry, just interrupt, just to give me another point of introduction. You mentioned before that the rule in Israel is that if you wish to get a divorce, it has to be done by a get, because there isn't any other way. The Jewish law is the law of the state. If a person has married in reform, for example, or in liberal, in Israel, but marriage not recognized. What then happens if there are, say, children, and if then there is a need to get a divorce? Presumably, a get is irrelevant to such a person because he never married within a system that wanted the get in the first place. But having said that, the children would be regarded by the state as mamzerim, or...
That is an interesting question. This is applicable in this country too. If someone gets married in a reform synagogue, the question is, to what extent is that wedding valid or marriage valid in Jewish law? And on that, there is a dispute amongst the rabbis, amongst modern rabbis, amongst the poskim today. And there are different views. According to one view, to be on the safe side, you demand that the husband gives a get. If he refuses, then it's easier to allow the matter to subside and allow the woman just to get on with her life. It's easier because the wedding can be regarded as, or the marriage can be regarded as invalid.
Yes, yes.
And the reason why a reform marriage would be invalid is because the supervision was faulty. And also the testimony is faulty. Because if the rabbi is a reform rabbi who is the witness, then presumably is not a Shomer Mitzvot, is not a Torah observant Jew in our, according to our definition. And in that case, he's not allowed to be a witness. He certainly is not allowed to be a supervisor. So on that basis, nothing would be kosher. Since nothing is kosher, then the wedding is not valid. And that's the way you get out. But not everybody agrees, because this is a very important question, because they do want to get married. If a man and a woman go to a reform synagogue and tell the rabbi they want to get married, then their wish is to be married. Since their wish is to be married, maybe they are married anyway. Maybe they are.
Yeah.
But so these doubt. Yeah. So some authorities say that if it's possible to give a get, then it's better because you are on the safe side. But you're right that it's a question. We can do it. We can do it subsequent to this question. We can deal with that question. It's a difficult one as well. Like all the questions connected with family law are very complicated, and they don't entirely suit the modern world in which we live, given that so many people are not orthodox, are not from, are not interested, are completely indifferent to Jewish law, or some people are hostile to the rabbis in Israel, and they don't like the whole system. Given their circumstances, very, very difficult. And Israel has got, has given authority to the rabbis to decide these matters, so long as, and they've got the stranglehold over it, and there are enough religious people in Israel to not to allow any government to change anything at this present time. Netanyahu couldn't change the law with regard to the army, although they are being drafted. And a lot of yeshiva students are going to the army now because they're being drafted. But in fact, he couldn't get any new law through. Didn't get, it was not, it's just by default they were being drafted. But nothing, because there are enough religious people in Israel to veto any change. So it's not going to happen very quickly. But some reform rabbis have now been recognized by the state. So I don't know what's going to happen. But against over, they're very bitterly opposed, the chief rabbis, to this. The hostility to reform is very raw in Israel. And they're not afraid to mince their words. Like here we want to live in peace. And we don't, I don't think attacking reform in this country will help in any way. But in Israel, it's a matter of power, and they are going to attack them. And they are. So, that's the position. Anyway, Rav Eliashiv was obviously a very Orthodox rabbi. And he took part in many, many decisions of this nature. It says, it's interesting to read all this, why he, and I'm reading the second paragraph. He died a few months ago, as you know, at the age of 102, so he was a very, you only become the leader of Orthodoxy when you are 100, before that. And the people who are contending, you'll be surprised who is contending now for the leadership of the Haredi world, the two people. One is two great people and apparently very lovely people. One of them is 98 and he is Rav Scheinberg, and the other one, and I was reading an article, where did I read it? I read an article analyzing these two great men. Where did I read this article? It was a very interesting article. Yes, in the most of the is a new newspaper in Israel called, it's a religious newspaper, it's called, maybe you have heard of it, what is it? Makor Rishon, it's called, Makor Rishon. It's a religious newspaper, it's the, it's a continuation of HaTzofeh, and it's got the same type of articles and supplements and so on. There was a very interesting analysis of these two leaders. The other one is the Rabbi Shlomo Auerbach, Shmuel Auerbach, who lives in Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Scheinberg, they both live in Yerushalayim. Actually, one is 98, the other one is only 82. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was his father, and he was a very great man. They're all great rabbis. And they are the successors, these two great. And they're different in their approach, but apparently they both have very good names. The Rav Eliashiv then was the leader of Orthodoxy, of Haredi Orthodoxy, non-Zionist Orthodoxy in Israel. He was 20, it says that. He was 20 years. For 20 years, he was Dayan in the Beit Din Rabbani Agadol, in the Supreme Rabbinical Court in Yerushalayim. The note tells us that, note number two, Lo Rabim Yodim, not many people know, that Rav Eliashiv was the rabbi of Ramle for a short while, until he resigned from this job. Lachar mikhen shimesh tkufa ktara v'etayedina ezori b'Yerushalayim v'etashana Tanakh, the Yadveta Dinah Rabbanya Gadol. Then he went to Yerushalayim. It's not so important, really, but he was a member there for 20 years. But then he also resigned from the next job. Ad asher etpatemet tefkidov, ze bitrikat delet. He was very angry and he left the job. Bishel parashat ha'ach v'achot. That was a very, very important decision. The case was of a brother and a sister who got married to each other. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. I think so. I'm not. I think that I tell you, I didn't have time to. I know that my father had a whole book about this. What happened? I'll have to. No, of course not. What happened? It created a tremendous storm. There was. They didn't get married. They had a child, and he was. I don't know exactly what it was. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I tell you, it was a question of a mamzer. Definitely a question of a mamzer. There was. It involved the birth of a mamzer, and he was not allowed to get married, according to Jewish law. Yeah. And Rav Goren, he was the chief rabbi of Israel at the time. Yeah. He managed to find a loophole. I can't tell you now what the loophole was, and he wrote a whole study of this, but the Haredim disagreed with him. Mm-hmm. Goren represented the more Zionist approach to Jewish law, and he wanted to find a solution, because the man involved, I think his name was Shalit, he was anti-religious, and the whole thing became, it's 1972, you're going back a long time. In any case, the Rav Goren made his decision to allow that child to get married according to Jewish law, and he ruled that he was not a mamzer. Everybody in the rabbinic world on the side of Rav Eliashiv, the Haredim, disagreed. And you could see, they wrote the Psak, Bezalel Julti was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim at the time. He wrote several articles in Apardes Rabbinical Journal, published in America. The title of that article was Triat Ha'eter Shel Rav Goren, the rejection of the Heter, which means the permission to get married, of Rav Goren. And Rav Goren, he always took controversial decisions. He was a very controversial person, but he was a fighter, and he wanted Jewish law to do whatever one can to coexistence with the secular Israel. What shall I say? And this still goes on. There are rabbis who want coexistence with Israeli society, and others they want to build a wall around themselves. And this is what the difference is between Haredim and the more enlightened section of Orthodoxy. Anyway, that was a case that we can look up in greater detail next time. I don't know the details precisely. I've given you the outline. Bemalach, my father didn't agree with Rav Goren either, and he was very angry with Rav Goren. Bemalach kunato unakat al pi rov kap zika machmir. So during the time that he was the judge in the Supreme Rabbinical Court, he followed a strict view, bikar bishilat kfiat get, especially when it came to the question of compelling a husband to give a get, because as you can see, according to Talmudic law, interpretation of this verse, which I read, maybe I read it before you came in, Ruth, so I'll read it again. The verse is the title of this study. V'chatav la sefer getut v'natan b'yada. It says that the husband writes the get for his wife, specifically. It's called Nishma. A get is to be written specifically for the woman that you intend to give it to. So when you write, you have to know exactly who you're writing for. Ksevukitut is the get. Get, some people explain, get, it's not a true explanation. It's just very interesting. The Gaon of Vilna has discovered, I don't think he had to think a lot, he was a very brilliant mind, but he tells us that the letters Gimel Tet never come together in any other word except this, which is not the originally Hebrew word, the Akkadian word for document. But the, and it occurs in other contexts as well in the Talmud and the Mishnah. But the reality is, it's interesting, Gimel Tet never occur together in Hebrew. So he says it's an appropriate name for the bill of divorce.
Does it have gematria attached to it as well?
Get, yes. The rabbis say that the gematria, the rabbis say that the gematria of get is 12, and that's the number of lines you have to get. You have to have in a get. Yeah. Whether that's to do with the fact that it's called a get, I don't know. I don't know the origin of this 12 lines. Why it has to have 12 lines, I don't know. It's got to be written according to certain rules, and one of them is that it's got to have 12 lines.
Does the content ever change, or is it a standard form?
The content changes only in terms of the names. You have to write precisely. The names have to be so precise, more than in the Ketubah. If you get the name wrong, you've had it, the get is not kosher. And there are, you believe it or not, rabbis who do get in have got whole libraries of how to write names in Hebrew. Yes, because Jews have lived all over the world, and there are all kinds of strange names. And how do you write them in Hebrew? How do you write Thames in Hebrew? How do you write even Pinnah in Hebrew, although it's not so difficult, Pinnah. But there are more complicated names, and personal names, and there are old books. My father was a rabbi in Germany and was in charge of these things. He had these books. He had books. Yes. Look up how to write James. How do you write the word name James in Hebrew? And so on. So you've got to get the names right. You've got to get the name of the place exactly right. In the Ketubah also, you have to get the place right. You've got to write where the wedding takes place. London or London. In Benham, we still write London. But if you go a little bit further out, you've got to write Gerard's Cross would already be Gerard's Cross.
Wow.
So you've got to find out how to write these names, and that's a study in itself. Yeah. But
there's a shul there in New Zealand.
Is it really?
New Zealand.
Is it really?
Christchurch shul, well, there is a city called Christchurch where there was an earthquake. Was there an earthquake? But there's a shul. So now I'll come to the quote. It was written by Dr. Avraham Reiner in an article about Rabbi Yashi, which appeared in Tavshin Ayin Aleph not long ago. But I don't know this this periodical, the Tuim. And he writes like this: Bishlat kfiyat get al ba'alim sarvanim hovila Rav Eliashiv b'shivto b'veit adin harabanim alach shemana kimat kol efshirot shil kfiyat get. So Rav Eliashiv, in relation to this question of whether to force husbands, when to force husbands to give a get, Rav Eliashiv, he followed a very severe application of the law, and therefore he wouldn't concede that it's allowed to force the husband. So there were very few cases.
But where does it say actually you can't force?
Well, the Talmudic interpretation of this verse.
It doesn't say you can't force, it just says the husband should give it.
Right, so he should give it to no one else. And that means you mustn't force it.
You can't
give it. Well, the logic is that just as you marry through consent, you divorce through consent. But the anomaly is that the woman has to accept it again, but she does not have to get married against her will. There's no such thing like Muslims. We don't. But we have it in the divorce laws, we have this. So this was revised in the 10th century, and the law now is that the woman has to consent. That's why sometimes you hear about husbands who are chained.
Because the wife won't accept it.
If the wife doesn't accept. If the wife refuses, but it happens much less often. And there is a way out for husband. And because the husband is, there is a way out. And that way out, in the Middle Ages, was very difficult. Nowadays it's quite simple, actually. It's called Heter Me'a Rabbanim. It's called, you see, a husband can have two wives, according to Torah law. It was banned. It's been banned. You're not allowed to have two husbands. But if your wife deliberately refuses to accept your get, then you can go to 100 rabbis and seek permission from them to get married to another wife, and it happens sometimes. But
isn't the trained woman
well, sometimes a woman is unreasonable. It's not only men who can be unreasonable. Women can also be very obstinate. Look, in the cases of divorce, you can have terrible bitterness. So one of the sides of both of them are obstinate and horrible to each other, and it's to do with that. It's a shame that religious law has become entangled in personal bitterness and in very emotional situations. But because of this attitude of Eliashib, you see, it's all to do with the interpretations of the Talmud.
Sure.
See? The Talmud interprets this at the Mishnah, and ultimately the Oral Law, which is very ancient. And according to Orthodox opinion, it is integral to the Torah. It's just another form in which the Torah has been handed down to us. And the oral law is no less authoritative than the written law. Just because it's written, it does not mean that it is more authoritative. So, if it says v'chatav la'sevikli tuf yetam yada, it means that he has to want to do it. And if he doesn't want to do it, he cannot be compelled. This is the basic fundamental rule. Nevertheless, there are situations where you can compel in Jewish law. But Rav Eliashiv restricted the cases very much, and it depends what kind of rabbi you are. And that's a matter for Dayan. It depends what attitude you take, how you interpret the cases. So Rav Eliashiv, he belonged to a very strict school, and he didn't want to compel husbands. Kirvot Hashanim, and as the years went on, and his influence became greater in halachic matters, Avchaim Dazru, Liot Dominantit Yoter Vyoter Bivate Adin Rabbanim, this attitude of Eliashiv became more dominant, and V'chach Hafach Rav Eliashiv, and in this way, Rav Eliashiv became the posek, the decider, who was more influential than any other person. Ulechumra, in other words, take a strict view. And because he took a strict view, there were some women who couldn't get rid of their husbands, and they suffered as a result of his decisions. במאמר זה נידון בכמה פסיקותיו של רב אליאש בסוגיית כפיית הגט, נסה לעמוד על דרכו ההלכתי בעניין זה. And in this, and now he goes through a few cases. You'll see, it's interesting. Some of it is tragic, but look what happened. So the first tshuva comes from 1955. It's quite a long time ago. But as I said, he was a very old man, Rav Eliashiv, when he died. So this is a case that happened, that actually happened, of course. Isha Tana, a woman came to the Beit Din and argued, Shelachar Nisuea, yes, I'm too lying, that after her marriage, Nisuin is marriage, Nitbarer la, it became clear to her, Shebala Sovel mitpatsuyot shel shigaon, that sometimes he becomes insane, he suffers from episodes of insanity. Me'et le'et, from time to time. Aisha ta'ana she'na yechola li'chiyot imo. So this woman, she argued that she can't live with him anymore. Uvikshah she'bedin yichpeh alav li'ten la'get. But he didn't want to give a get, because why should he want to get divorced? So, but she wanted the bedin to compel him to give her a get. Beit Adin HaEzori Chakar Et Aisha, the local Beit Din, Ezori means district court, investigated the, or Chakar rather, they investigated the woman or questioned her and wanted to know the details. And Umatza Sheisha Yada Kvar Lifnei Nesuea, and discovered, the rabbis of this Beit Din discovered that this woman knew before her marriage, Shebala miyuad hu chole mefager besichlo. She knew that he was a mentally ill person, or he was mefager. He was mentally subnormal,
retarded.
Yeah. Subnormal. Va'rofe shebadak oto, and the doctor who examined him, matza, found שמצבו בזמן התביעה לא נשתנה מה שהיה קודם לכן, that the time when this woman came to the court it was what he'd been beforehand, and on that basis ועל כן דחה בית הדין בקשה לתביעת הגט, and therefore the bed din rejected her request that a get, he be compelled to give a get on the assumption that she knew whom she was marrying. She knew he was not a normal person. She still got married to him. So what reason has she now to force him to give a get? She agreed. And nothing has changed. And the marriage was valid.
But conversely, you could say when they got married, he didn't know what he was doing then.
Pardon?
No, I'm not being funny.
No, the only reason to compel him to give a get is if she didn't know that he was a subnormal or retarded. But she knew.
She knew, yeah.
She, according to the doctor, nothing had changed. She knew. She was given the right information. She agreed to get married to him. And now he has to agree to give her a get. And since he doesn't agree, it's just too bad. Arav Zelzniki Tamal Achad Beit Adin, but there was a rabbi there in the court with Rav Eliashiv, and he was surprised about this decision. ועל העובדה שהדיינים חכו בשלט ידיעתה של הישר מצב בעלה לפני נשואה, and he questioned the fact that the Beit Din, in the district Beit Din, had actually investigated or questioned the woman about her knowledge of her husband's condition before the wedding. Ledato, according to his view, al menat la'tzdik et bakashat ha'isha legirushin, in order to justify the woman's request to be divorced, dai betanat ha'isha, it's enough for a woman to say shebe'et nisuei amula omnam shebala miyuad. She could say, or it would have been enough for the woman to say, that at the time when she got married, they told her, people told her, they did tell her that her husband, her intended husband, was restricted mentally. Ach lo yada, but she didn't know that he was insane sometimes, and that he suffered from actual outbursts of madness. So she didn't know. Mumo shel ha'baal im ken umum nistar. So therefore, this is one of the cases which the Mishnah already mentions, of mistakes, a mistaken marriage. She didn't agree to marry such a man. That's it. She didn't marry, she didn't agree. Already at the time of the marriage, she didn't agree. Because It's a mum nista, it's a defect that's concealed, that's concealed from her. Nista means concealed. Yeah. Mum is a blemish or a defect or an illness. She galalisha, so she only became aware of his condition after she got married. Yeah. So according to this, Diane, yesh ilalich pot alav latet laget. There is a good reason to force him to give a get, because she got married under false pretenses. That's it. This is that's where, according to the din of the Mishnah, you can force a husband. But Rav Eliashiv lo kibel edat Rav Zetzlensky. He didn't accept that view, Rav Eliashiv. Mipnei shesavar, because he held שהאישה הייתה חייבת לבחון היטב מה המצב בעלה לעתיד. That the woman, it was her obligation, she was under obligation to check very carefully what her husband's condition was. ולא לקבל את מה ששמע עליו מבחינת כזה ראה וקדש. And not to accept what she'd heard in the sense that people told her and that's it and she can just go and have kiddushin without caring. כזה ראה וקדש means look at this and kadesh. It comes from a different context, but it's a phrase. It's a maxim. It's an idiom. It's an idiom. Kadesh. You don't need to look into it. You just do it. And she shouldn't have. She shouldn't have been so flippant about it. She should have looked into the case more carefully. Mishum kach. Therefore. He agreed with the Bedin, with the district Bedin. Yafez a Bedin. The Bedin was correct. Kishibachan etev ma'aya la ishala dad if tenesua levala. The Bedin was correct in examining the case carefully to see what the woman did know before she married that husband. Vihriya, and therefore Rav Eliashiv came to the conclusion. שהייתה צריכה לברר היטב את מה ששמע בעלה לעתיד. She should have investigated very carefully what she'd heard about an intended husband. ומשום כך, and because of that, אין מחלתו בגדר מום נסתר. She should have known. She should have found out. Therefore, it's not a defect that was deliberately withheld from her. ואין כאן עילה לכפיית נגט. Therefore, there's no cause to give, to force him to give a get. And that was the decision of the High Court. So she was stuck. Bishbal, next case. I don't know why, we don't know what happened to this woman, what did she do, but they were stuck. She was stuck. Bal choleb machalat la nefila. Then you have another case. This was husband who had the illness of epilepsy. Machalat nefila, nafal means to fall. Kishesh shanim lachar tshuvato. So 6 years later, so you see, it doesn't come, it doesn't happen so often that you get these cases. Nidrash Rav Eliashiv lemikre dome. Rav Eliashiv was involved again in a case, a similar case. Be'et sheyashav bevet hadin harabani hagadol, when he was conducting a case in Beit Adin HaRabani HaGadol, Letzidam Shel Rav Bezalel Julti, the Rav Avadia Adaya. So this was a very high powered Beis Din with very important rabbis. And they all published these decisions. This judge who has written this article, he looked up the collected decisions that are published. So, what happened there? So, Bezalel Julti, as I said before, was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. Unfortunately, he died young of a heart attack. He was in 61. I once saw him. He once came to Jewish College. And his talk was so impressive, and it's really 50 years ago, or 60, it was 1960, I saw him, not 1960, in the 60s, 1965 maybe, you know, maybe a bit later. And I still remember what he said, believe it or not, because it made such an impression on me. Bakatev Isau, he said, it was Siddur Nassau. Bakatev Isau, you've got to, he spoke to the rabbis, I suppose, and he said, I wasn't the rabbi then, but he said that it's a yoke that you have to carry on your shoulders.
Yeah.
It's interesting, I still remember what he said. And I remember the where it was, the meeting and so on. But he died, unfortunately, as I say, he was died young, so probably he would not have heard of him. He was alive, well, since then they've only appointed one more, so he died in the 70s. Then there was another rabbi who died, and since then there's not been a chief rabbi who was alive, believe it or not. They just can't agree whom to appoint. They can't agree, I'll tell you what they can't agree on. They can't agree what kind of a rabbi should appoint Yerushalayim, whether they should be a modern Zionist, Orthodox, or a Haredi. Can't agree, so there's no chief rabbi of Yerushalayim.
Neither side will give way, will they?
No, of course not.
Don't for either. Don't for either.
It's a terrible divide. It's not a democracy.
Maybe you don't need the chief rabbi since they've gone on without one.
Well, yeah. It would be nice to have one. It's crazy. I think it's crazy. Isha Tana. שבעלה החולה במחלת הנפילה מכה אותה ואף הפסיק לפרנס אותה. The only reason why you've got chief rabbis of Israel is because there is a very clear political setup to appoint a chief rabbi. And at the end somebody wins. Enough votes. And Rav Metzger became chief rabbi 10 years ago. I think he's leaving the post now because he can only be chief rabbi for 10 years. I believe he doesn't want to continue. The other rabbi who is a great Tamil Chacham, the Rishon LeZion. The present Roy Rishon LeZion is Rav. I've forgotten his name for the moment, but he wants to stay on. So he wants the law to change. He wants the Knesset to change the law that he doesn't have to go. And he's got support. So people love people like him very much. But Rav Metzger,
stay for life.
Well, maybe for another 10 years. He's fairly young. He's quite young. Rav Metzger is also quite young. But Rav Metzger was not the greatest of the choices they had. They had a much better choice, but he lost it because he was a Zionist. He lost the vote. Rav Eliashiv was on the side of Rav Metzger. The other one was the really great man who was a candidate was Rav Yaakov of Ramat Gan. Yaakov, I've forgotten his name too now. I don't know why I keep forgetting all these names. Okay, Ariel, Rav Yaakov Ariel. Have you heard of Rav Ariel? His four brothers who are very eminent rabbis, but he is the most eminent. He's very eminent. Rav Ariel is really, he's a lovely, lovely man. I once met him at the conference, a very, very nice and modest man. That's one of the reasons he didn't get the job, because he's very humble, he's a humble man, but he's a very good scholar. He's really, he's read many books, and he's a wonderful man. Anyway, he was not elected. Metzger got the job instead. In any event, that's why there's a chief rabbi of Israel, there isn't a chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. It's difficult. Anyway, this was the case. So Rav Eliashiv, this was the case. Isha Tana, so you can see where I am, yes? Four or five rows from here. Isha Tana, a woman came to the Beit Din and argued, Shebala Chole claimed that Shebala Chole b'machalat ha'nefila makeh ota, that her husband, who has got this epileptic illness, makeh ota, hits her, and he also has stopped supporting her. Abal ikrish, so the husband denied shunoeg ba'alimut, that he is violent towards her. Ta'an sheno mesugal avod, and he claimed that he can't work. Vosif shegeti lo tekabel, and he also added that she wouldn't receive a get. Harofa,
all lose.
Very nice man. Harofa shel ba'al, now the doctor of this husband, Heida, she'af she'ivchun ha'machala eno kal, והוא ככל הנראה חולה באפילפסיה. Although it's difficult to determine the illness that he suffers from, nevertheless, it appears that he is suffering from epilepsy. הרב אלישיב, שכתב את פסק הדין, he was writing this decision, הגדיר כדרכו בצורה חדה וברורה את השאלות שעמדו לפני בית הדין. He was very precise and very incisive, רב אלישיב, of course, he was a great scholar, as we know. So he put the question very clearly before the Beit Din, and also the causes for divorce that they had to examine. And this is what he wrote. Tviat Aisha, the woman claims, Lachof Labal, to compel the husband, Latet Laget, so the claim of the woman that the husband should give a get to her, should be compelled, mevuseset al yesod shtei ilot, is based on two causes, two arguments. One, Aleph, huchach shabal uchole nichpe, is being proven that the husband he suffers from an illness that in the Mishnah is called nichpe. And most commentators think that this is epilepsy. Nichpe mashmao, if you see in note number 8, nichpe. So nichpe is not a word used today. So the question is, what does the Mishnah mean? What kind of illness is this? So mostly, scholars think this is epilepsy. Ela shlemachala zo tzurot rabot. Except that this illness manifests itself in different ways, many ways. Be'erich nichpe beWikipedia. So in the entry in Wikipedia, you have 40 different types of afflictions of this illness. Aposkim mechalkim ben atosfaot shel kol machala aniket b'shem ze. So the poskim deal with what the Mishnah is talking about, nichpe. What kind of what definition does it have in Jewish law, nichpe? What kind of epilepsy is it? So it that depends. The definition of the illness depends on the frequency of the episodes and the violence of the epilepsy. I once saw somebody falling all of a sudden in a shul when I was young. In Munich, I was a teenager. So somebody did suffer from epilepsy. All of a sudden, he fell. So it's quite an unpleasant illness.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen somebody falling?
Many.
You've seen.
I worked in a place with people who had epilepsy.
What people were had this?
Chartik near Haifa.
Was
there? I lived there for about 2 years.
When you saw people falling all of a sudden,
most of the people there had epilepsy somewhere. Yeah.
It was hospital.
Young people, older people.
I saw it in Munich once. Somebody in Munich, in Schul, all of a sudden he fell. And so the definition of the illness depends on the frequency, on the violence. In other words, the otzma, violence perhaps is the wrong word, but the strength of the attack, the severity of the attack. Ma'asav shel ha'baal, לאחר ההתקף, and what the husband does afterwards, how does he recuperate, how does he come into again. ואם ההתקף מצטרף למחלה אחרת, and whether the attack is combined or has is also connected with another illness that this man might have. ובוחנים את האפשרויות למתן גט לפי נסיבות המחלה, and then Jewish law investigations are carried out to see whether this is the case of Nichpe that the Mishnah mentions in order to give a get. So this was the the first point was that it had been proven that the husband was afflicted with this illness. לפי עדות הרופא, הבעל מסוגל לעבוד כל עבודה פיזית. According to the testimony that the doctor, she was a woman doctor, she said that the husband can work, physical work, any work. והבעל פרק מעליו כל עול של המשפחה. But the husband doesn't want to support the family. ייתכן שהאישה תמצא לבעל אחר אשר ידאג להביא לילדיה, and it's possible that the woman would find another husband who would look after her and the children. ובגללו היא מעוגנת, and because of him she is an aguna. Aguna means chained. It comes from a ship.
Ogen.
Yeah.
Anchored.
Okay. Yes, of course, it's the same word. I don't know which other word it might be connected right to. A gun. Umechuseret kol. So, Nevish, that woman, is an aguna. She can't marry anybody else. She's got a useless husband. And she's got nothing. She hasn't even got...
If the doctor says he can work, why shouldn't he support her?
He doesn't want to.
Might not want to. But isn't he compelled to? If you won't give her a divorce.
Well, how do you compel someone to work? It's a breach of the gift. It's a breach of the
gift. Yeah.
It's an obligation.
Yeah.
You've got to
give her a Jewish manner.
Well, Rabbi Yashiv is disagreeing. Ulam gam kan dachar Rabbi Yashiv sofo shel yom. At the end of the day, I find it interesting that they translate. That's new, isn't it? So at the end of the day, that's an English idiom that translates. You know, we're Bessofo Shel Davar. You're used to it already. I saw it, but
Bessofo Shel Davar is more
frequent. Anyway, he writes Bessofo Shel Yom. Rabbi Yashiv rejected that. He didn't think these were good causes for compelling that. He found that you can't compel. Umatza she'i efshar lechpot al habal liten get ishto. You can't compel the husband to give a get to his wife. So now, the right of this article is examining the background to this decision. And you'll see why Rabbi Yashiv came to this decision. We've got a few more minutes, so we'll just go through this and then we'll stop this. And this is Beraui Shlivchan Efor, it's a Sibale Deragimshus, there's no flexibility here. And the woman lands up in a very tragic situation, which is very horrible, really. Nifsak Bashulchan Aruch. So this is the Psak, this is the decision in the Shulchan Aruch. 9. Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer takes us right into the laws of divorce in Eben Ezer. The Shulchan Aruch has got 4 sections, and one of them, the third one, is Eben Ezer. And Eben Ezer is come from this week's Siddur, where it says that that the woman should be Ezer Kenegdo. Ezer Kenegdo, a woman that God decided in chapter 2 in the creation story, that God decided to give man a helpmate. So, Ezer, Eselo, Ezer Kenegdo, I will make him somebody to help him. That she should be able to Kenegdo, she should be able to compliment him. That is so this title is based on that verse that we shall read this week in the Siddur. Shulchan Aruch says like this: Ish ish amishtate mide yom yom. So a man becomes insane every single day. Becomes insane. Vomeret ishto, and his wife says, Avi mechamat dochko isyani lo. So what is his wife saying in the bedin? My father, because he was poor, isyani lo, he forced me to marry him. Usvuraiti lekabet v'yefshi ki umetoraf, and I thought I could accept it, but I can't live with this man. Ki umetoraf, because he's mad. V'yereani v'nyargeini v'chaso, and I'm afraid that he'll kill me once when he's angry. Ein kofin oto ligaretz. Shulchan Aruch says we don't compel him to divorce. Shein kofin ela botam shabru chachamim. So the psak of Shulchan Aruch, who was a Sephardi, you cannot compel a husband to divorce except in the cases which the rabbi specifically mentioned in the Mishnah. You can't add to those cases. So she's added such a woman. Alachat v'psikad Rabbi Yosef Karo mitzamtzemet biyoter tafshirut likfiyat get. So you can see the Shulchan Aruch restricts the cases of compulsion to in the minimum cases that used to come up 1,000 years before. This is in the Mishnah, so you can't add any cases. Lemaaseh nitan lilmod mimena shenitan lichpot lebal atet get rak b'mikrim ha'me'atim. So you can only give a get. A few cases are mentioned in earlier sources, which go back, the Shulchan Aruch was written in the 16th century, so you're going back 1200 years before, to in a very different society, there were a few cases. Yeah? So if you come across those, you can give a get, otherwise you can't. You can't compel.
If there's a danger to life, then surely you can override all of that.
But it's not good enough.
The fact that she thinks
she's
going
to kill
him. She thinks he's going to kill him.
She's afraid.
He's going to kill her.
She's afraid.
If the Bet-Din believes that he may kill her, for sure he's mad enough to kill her, then surely they can override
her. Believe her.
Yeah. Well, but Rabbi Yosef Karo didn't think that was good enough.
But the man can break every part of his contract.
She's not dead yet.
With no problems. The man can break every part of the ketubah with no problems.
Yeah.
No problem at all.
Yeah.
So it's a one-sided contract. It's not really enforceable.
Yeah, but that's what people argue. That's what they complain about. I wanted to tell you what the complaint is. It's a very tragic situation.
How did the rabbis get to this?
That's Jewish law. The question is, what is Jewish law? We are coming to the central question. What is Jewish law? It's not easy. Jewish law is not easy.
That just seems to be a disadvantaged rule in that
country. Not very much.
To strengthen a marriage. But you can see that...
That's the essence, to strengthen a marriage.
No, it's based... I'm not sure there is. I don't think there is any essence. It's just the decree of the Torah. That's what Rav Eliashiv...
But the rabbis...
As you come to the end of this essay, you'll see. Rav Eliashiv understood this. But he said, it's a decree of the Torah. That's what the Torah wants us to do.
Or the interpretation of the decree of the rabbi.
No, he didn't think that way at all. He doesn't think that way, I'm afraid. There's nobody who thinks that way. They think that this is the Torah. This is the Torah. The interpretation is separate from the Torah. The interpretation is the Torah. I'm just explaining. I'm not here to... I'm telling you how it is. Rabbi Yashi was also aware of this. He says that's the Torah, and you have to keep the Torah. Do you like it or not?
I'm trying to understand.
You can't understand.
I can't understand.
You can't. No, it's not our logic. You can't.
No, I can't.
In the Rabbi Yashiv in Eletik has said exactly the same. Nobody can understand it, but that's the law. And the people who argue ideologically against the whole position in the rabbinic world. But that's the line he took. And since he was the most important Haredi rabbi, people listened to him. You know what we say? Ikovadin etah can't change the law.
No, I'm just trying to understand, which we can't understand. That's what I'm saying.
There's no logic.
No, I can't follow the logic. Yeah.
No, there's no logic.
No.
Just the law.
Yeah?
All right. But some laws have no logic. They're just the laws.
That's what I'm saying.
Didn't agree with the Shulchan Aruch. Look, it is a complicated question. Harema, the Rabbi Moshe Isles, Meir al Halacha Zo Bagatav La Shulchan Aruch. But this is the case that we just had. He says, Mi Shehu Nichpe. Okay, so that's one case, Shulchan Aruch. Now the Rema, Mi Shehu Nichpe. Somebody is suffering from this illness, epilepsy. They say, Yesh Omrim Sheino Mums. Some say that's not a defect at all. Vein kufim al zeh legaresh. You can't force anybody to divorce just because he's got epilepsy. Mikol makom. But the Rama already says, Ein kufim otash tiyemo. We don't compel her to remain with him either. O ilu vata mechamat tana, because she has got a good reason. ויש אומרים דאבי מומביש וחופים לגרש. This is another view, says the Rama, that it is a defect. This epilepsy, that's the case we have. That it is a defect, and you do compare. So Rav Yashiv had the Shulchan Aruch against the Rama, because this man did have epilepsy. But the Rama wasn't sure himself. The Rama said there was a difference of opinion in his time already. The 16th century. Rama mevi'e for machloket. So Rama is bringing here a dispute between Rishonei Poskim, amongst the early Poskim. Rishonei Poskim means from the Middle Ages. Bishlat machalat anefila, with regard to epilepsy, if it is a defect recognized in Jewish law that justifies kviat get, compelling get, or shurak get a machala, or it's just an illness of the husband to tell you, can't just force the husband to give a get just because he's ill. I mean, that's also, we can understand that. Leshon acher, in other words, aposkim chalukim b'shelah, machalat anefila nechlelet botam mikrim, so is epilepsy a madness, or is it just an illness? Probably it's just an illness, to be honest. But who knows?
It's almost completely treatable.
Yes, completely treatable nowadays.
Then you're right.
That's right.
Yeah. So
what we have about a case like this epilepsy, the fact that he doesn't want to work is
different
not.
Matter.
It's different matter. You can't compel a husband to give a get just because he refuses to work.
He may be afraid to go to work because of his epilepsy.
Yeah, there are all kinds of reasons. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so Rav Yashiv therefore argued. So what we have here down to us, tradition from the Middle Ages, that where there is a machloket poskim, you've got a dispute amongst the deciders, the authorities, the early authorities, and nobody has decided. No, the Rama didn't decide. He says some say this and some say that. Some say it's a defect. Some say it's not a defect at all. It's just an illness. So where you have a dispute, you can't compel the husband to give a get. Ein lichpot, that's what the psak of Rav Yashiv, on the basis of earlier decisions, on the basis of the language of the Mishnah. You see, the basis of that is, why is there machloket? So, I mean, I'll do this step with you and I'll explain it. Rav Yashiv decides Behek is Lidivar Rema, even as Simon Kufnan Dal and Sif Kaf Alef. Elsewhere he says as follows, that there is a dispute amongst the poskim im lishon yotzi sheba mishtam mitpareshet kemo lishon kofin im lav. You see, the Mishnah says in certain cases that the husband should yotzi, meaning give a get. But what does yotzi mean? Yotzi, amotzi lechem in haaretz. It means let her go. So what do you mean let her go? Is it just a recommendation, or is it by compulsion? And they argue about this, because there is a word to compel in the Mishnah, kofin, but it doesn't use the word kofin, it uses the word yotzi. Yotzi may not mean compel. And there was a dispute. V'chevan di'ika plukta d'ravatana ra'ui l'achmir. And the, since there is a dispute as to what the Mishnah says in connection with this case, because the Mishnah itself says an ambiguous word, yotzi.
Yotzi is to go, I thought it meant to go out.
Yeah, no, yotzi means to for him to make it go. To make it go out, yotzi. Yeah. But there is a word, so that means that he has to agree. Yotzi means that he does it. Kofin means that the bedin compels.
But then this is for him to us.
But yotzi may mean simply that he has to decide. So he has to decide, you can't compel. And there is a dispute how to explain that word. And since there is a dispute, early authorities have already said that you can't force, because we don't know what the Mishnah meant. And if you don't know, it might be a forced get. Forced get is not kosher. Forced get means that the whole thing is very dangerous, because the other side of this particular equation is adultery. Because if a get is forced, but it is against the Torah that this get should have been forced, and the woman marries again, is a case of adultery, and the children are mamzerim. So this is the problem.
I'm just thinking about what is the problem for men to give a get anyway? If a woman wants to go, why shouldn't the men? What cases are we? Why shouldn't the men give a get anyway? What's the big deal?
Well, some men are vindictive. Yeah. I think it's only vindictiveness. Vindictiveness or stupidity. And maybe.
He wants to punish her like
you. Some men are very horrible.
Do you think it's
well, that's the truth. Some women also are very horrible.
Use it to get money out of the women as well.
Yes.
I know of one of the cases where they've paid to be allowed to be free.
Anyway,
fish out some money and then the man has gone away.
It's difficult. Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't allow it.
Time I know about that.
Really? And he said that this is a case of very severe matter. It's a very severe matter. He said the Chatam Sofer, Sheget Moseh, b'makom sheish machloket, shelo ucha, get batel min haTorah. If you force a man to give a get, in a situation where there is an ongoing machloket, going back to the Middle Ages, and nobody has ever decided the case, it's an invalid get, and therefore the woman is an eshtish, she's still married, she isn't even any doubt about it, and you can't give a get. There are disputes that can be decided. If most of the poskim agree that there is a good reason, but the suffering of a woman is not good enough, and
right.
It's not and
it's got to be dead before
you know, that's not good enough.
That's not good enough.
If you read my somewhere, I said it's not right. That's
it's terrible to be a dying. You ask a shaysha aguna umtukotak dola elach shosh ledat amyut. If there is most of the poskim think that you can, and when a woman would suffer greatly, then if you've got most of the poskim on your side, you can then force get. But if you've got a doubt and it's not most, then you can't. And you try very hard not to enforce this matter. So you see, you've got a little bit of a taste of the difficulty of this law, the way it's come down to us over 3 millennia. You're not talking about 2 days.
No,
you are not talking about modern times.
I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah.
You say yourself.
It's a question now of attitudes. What attitude do you take? Do you show these disputes about this? This takes us into the realm of philosophy of life. How to fit Jewish law into modern society? That's the next question, and it's not being ignored. They're obviously different views. Yeah, it's an interesting subject.
By the way, I can come home and achieve the comes of me.